Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday morning, November 4th, 2010. It is about 6:31 a.m. Central. I guess it's still standard Central Daylight Time. I guess this weekend we will change our clocks back. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic oversized and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, folks. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. We also now have a toll-free line, 888-773-4496. If you want to make a comment or ask a question, it's 888-773-4496. Or our direct line, 646-652-4620. You can send us your comments anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, sutton-associates.net. In his monthly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. In fact, I think Andy will be our guest in 2 weeks on this program. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. Liberty Talk Radio is now available via iTunes for your listening convenience. And lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, that takes care of the preliminaries this morning. We're really excited about having a guest. His name is Paul Jacobs. He's the president of Citizens in Charge. He is, in my opinion, the ultimate activist and defender of citizens' rights. He has placed himself in peril to defend the rights that are rightfully ours and not some bureaucrats. Awarded the Charlton Heston Courage Under Fire Award and from the CPAC and named a rising star in politics by Campaign and Elections magazine. He received the Society for Individual Liberties Phoenix Award and dubbed the best and the rightest. And not that he's a right-wing nut or anything like that, folks, by National Journal. I personally read his internet commentary, Common Sense, daily, and I'm wiser for it. I'd like you to join us and listen in, of course. And if you have any questions or comments, please call to 888-773-4496 or 646-652-4620. I asked Paul to come in a few minutes after the hour so we can dispense of all of the niceties and the introductions. You know, many people talk about liberty. I know I do. Paul Jacobs exemplifies what that really means. He was part of the Oklahoma Three that Drew Emerson wanted to incarcerate for apparently having an illegal petitioner trying to get votes, which was bogus. And he was willing to go to jail for it. And there was a big campaign here in Oklahoma to save the Oklahoma Three. I still have a button that says FreeTheOklahoma3.com. And he actually puts himself on the line. His commentary on a daily basis is magnificent. I know Paul, and I ask him, how do you do that? I mean, I can broadcast once in a while, but he can write every single day on issues that affect us. And I really encourage all of my listeners to go to Common Sense by Paul Jacobs. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact website, but you'll find him there very easily if you Google that, and I think you'll be better for it. And I think he's on the air right now. Paul, is that you?
Joe?
Yes.
How's it going?
Fine, Paul. You're coming in loud and clear. That's terrific. And, well, I should say, how are you doing after this referendum process? And I just finished the introductions. Everyone knows who you are. and how great you are, because I told them how great you are. And I guess we're all waiting.
You didn't have my wife on.
No, we don't tell wives that. But I'd like to get, first of all, your take on the election and how you think it went with all the referendums and any comments that you might have.
Well, you know, it was a super day. One of the measures that I was, most in favor of was in Oklahoma, your home state.
Right.
And it was State Question 750, which would make it just a little bit more reasonable for people to put an initiative or a referendum on the ballot. And that one, we were worried that the ballot title was very, very confusing. And in polling, you know, it wasn't a poll we did, but one that was done publicly, a lot of undecided, and so it confirmed that it was pretty confusing. And in the last week, we decided we needed the Citizens in Charge, the group I work with that tries to protect and expand the process for citizens to check their government through initiative and referendum around the country. Decided to we better communicate and let people know what was on the ballot and what it did. And so we ran a week of radio, and I was watching it all night, and it was just barely behind by about a half percentage point. And right as I was about to go to bed, I decided to hit refresh one more time on my computer screen, and all of a sudden, instead of being a half a percentage point, you know, behind, a few thousand votes behind out of nearly a million, it ended up being about a half a percentage point ahead. And it's going to make it easier for Oklahomans to,
right,
to check their government, and we were thrilled with that. Term limits passed on the Oklahoma ballot as well, and so did a measure to basically say, We don't want the federal government to tell us what we have to do when it comes to medical insurance. And, of course, those won around the country.
Right.
Most people don't realize it, but back in 2008 in Arizona, they put a measure on the ballot to say that you couldn't dictate to someone what their choices were when it came to medicine, to
right,
choosing their doctor, to choosing their insurance. And it lost very narrowly. It was tremendously outspent, but it ends up, I think, being the most successful losing initiative in the history of mankind, because that measure sparked the Arizona legislature to put it on the ballot because of Obamacare.
Right.
Oklahoma put it on the ballot, Missouri, number of other states. It won everywhere.
Right.
And it sends a heck of a message. Now, you know, other news, obviously, Republicans just making incredible gains in the House and some gains in the Senate. You know, I was pleased by that. I'm skeptical of the Republicans, as are many of my Republican friends. But I think it clearly sends a message to the Democrats that we're not looking for some radical let's let government run our lives solution. And in fact, you know, people will look at this as a Republican sweep. They looked at 2008 and 2006 as a Democratic sweep. I think the American people have not been sweeping back and forth. They've been at the same place, and they've been incredibly disappointed with Republicans and Democrats who seem to think that government is the solution to every problem. And I know that's not the rhetoric that Republicans use, but it has been the reality when they controlled both houses of Congress and George Bush was president.
Correct.
And so, you know, we look at these swings, but I think oftentimes it's merely the people trying to do the same thing, which is to get people in Washington and in their state legislatures and other places who will listen to them, who will do the basic American idea of government, which is we create rules that allow private citizens to do what they do, that allow
right,
the private sector
right,
to create jobs.
Right.
And so I'm thrilled with the election results. But, of course, the key, I think, for voters getting what they want is to not kind of figure they've done it and go back to something else. This Tea Party movement has got to hold the Republicans' feet to the fire, or preferably in it.
Right.
And we've got to stay engaged at every level of government.
Yeah. Paul, where are you calling from? I'm sorry, I don't even know where you're calling from.
Well, I am actually in Omaha, Nebraska. I came in to help a friend who is working to recall the mayor of Omaha.
Oh, okay. All right. The 402 area code, where is that?
That's Nebraska.
That is Nebraska.
Eastern Nebraska.
Okay. All right. I didn't recognize it, and I guess I haven't received many calls from Nebraska. They're sleeping when I'm on the air. Well, I get really concerned, Paul, when I hear one of the Republicans who had won the election, and I forgot which one it was, he says, well, now it's time for us to roll up our sleeves. I get really nervous when I hear that.
You know, yes, people are not looking, you know, people don't wake up in the morning and look for government to you know, make their breakfast or drive them to work or very much else. Government has some roles, and I think people generally want government to stick to those roles. Now,
right.
You know, we're basically 300 million people. We don't all think the same. Some people would like a lot more government, some a lot less. But I think the American people are looking for Republicans first to undo some of the things that have, frankly, really frightened us over the last 2 years. And I'm hopeful that the Republicans who took over the House, Boehner and company, will perhaps as the first order of business bring Obamacare up to a vote and repeal it. And there may be some parts of it, you know, it's just 2,900 pages. We got the 1099 insanity that's driving business people crazy that was slipped in. There may be other things slipped in. Heavens, there may be something good in it somewhere. But I think they need to bring it up and repeal it lock, stock, and barrel to send a message that they've got it. And then if there's anything good in it, bring that back up and pass it. But in terms of rolling up their sleeves, you know, you can take that a lot of different ways.
Right.
But I think your point's accurate. We're not looking for them to remake the world in their image.
Right.
We're looking for them to restore the government to some kind of common sense values. And if you look around the country, you know, there are a lot of measures on the ballot. Most of them, and people don't realize this, the vast majority, two-thirds of the measures on the ballot on Tuesday were put on the ballot not by voters through the initiative process, but by legislatures. And I wish there would have been more initiatives, because I think what comes from the voters through the petition process tends to be far superior ideas. Don't agree with them all, but far superior ideas than what gets put on the ballot by legislators. Now, two states really come to mind where I think some great stuff passed on the ballot. One of them is Oklahoma. It was the legislature who put the term limits for statewide officials on the ballot. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
They put State Question 750, which makes it a little easier to put something on the ballot for citizens. That was a great idea. Both of those championed by State Senator Randy Brogdon, who is one of my favorite people all over the country in terms of an elected official who really gets it. And you also had the medical freedom of choice that passed in Oklahoma. In Arizona, there were a number of measures that were put on by the legislature, several of them that we opposed at Citizens in Charge, two that would have made the initiative process tougher to use, Prop 109 and Prop 112, and both of those went down to defeat. We were thrilled to see that. But there were several measures, the medical freedom of choice that passed in Arizona that was put on by the legislature. There was also the affirmative, anti-affirmative action, get rid of racial and gender preferences, which has passed all over the country where it's been voted on, that passed in Arizona. And then there was a measure that basically guarantees the right to a secret ballot, which is a reaction to some of the legislation in Congress that didn't get passed, but that was is still being talked about, or at least was before Tuesday's election, where they would take away a secret ballot, and people are worried that in union elections, it would allow the unions to basically intimidate people into signing a card that says they want to have a union, and then not get to vote on that in a secret ballot. So, you know, some good things put on the ballot by legislatures as well, and you know, when you look at some of the other measures. There was a the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, put a measure on the ballot in Washington State that that would have created an income tax. Washington State, one of the handful of states that don't have a state income tax. And, of course, as you know, Joe, I'll bet, those states have grown economically much faster than other states. And, you know, in this time where we have governments not being able to grow by the rate they're used to, they're always looking for new revenue. That went down to a crushing defeat, thank goodness. And there were a couple of citizen initiatives there, one that, that restored the two-thirds majority for legislators to raise taxes, which the legislature had actually repealed. That passed, so some good things. In Massachusetts, there was a sales tax initiative that would have cut the sales tax by 3%. Carla Howell, libertarian activists put it on the ballot, but it went down to defeat. The teachers' unions, other public employee unions, raised about $5 million to scare people with ads against it, and the pro side spent about $10,000. So I don't know. That arithmetic is maybe too much for me, but something on the 500 to 1 you know, or 50 to 1 type margin. So, you know, we see this a lot, and I always look at the initiative process, and I realize that citizens are you know, they've got to have a check, and oftentimes they put measures on the ballot that then very powerful forces swamp in money, and some of my more liberal pro-campaign finance friends might say, oh, it's terrible because they spent money and they you know, defeated us.
Right.
Well, I think all we can ask for is a fighting chance. We can't stop the other side, whatever that side may be, from spending money. But the initiative process at least allows us to take an idea to our fellow citizens and get an up and down vote.
Yeah.
And earlier this year, there was a measure in California where PG&E, which is their one of their utility companies, was trying to make it a little tougher for localities to start their own utility companies, government-owned, and compete with PG&E. And they spent $40 million to try to pass that measure against something on the order of 100,000 against it, and it went down to defeat. There was a measure 2 years ago in California where the yes side outspent the no side 161-1 and lost. And so one of the interesting things when it comes to money on these ballot measures is that on the no side, because voters are skeptical and careful and know that if they vote no, they just keep what they've got, the status quo, it's oftentimes you know, more likely most initiatives fail, most ballot measures fail. And there's a reason for that. But so money on the no side does make it tough to pass a measure. Although when I was doing term limits for a decade or more around the country, you know, we regularly got outspent 5-1, 10-1, and we still won.
Yeah.
But on the yes side, in the idea that people can spend money and somehow trick the voters and pass some law, that's fantasy.
Right.
And again, you see big spending measures going down to defeat, and you see measures that spend little money winning. And it's because the voters can, you know, they don't have to decide between two candidates who, you know, are talking sound bites who they don't know. They don't have to decide who's the more honest. With a ballot measure, they can read it. It's in black and white. It doesn't change its mind after you pass it, and so it just is. For me, I think the voters are in a much better position when they're deciding an issue than when they're trying to define, you know, which candidate's going to actually do what they say they'll do.
Right. I'd like to take this second just for station identification. Folks, this you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. With us this morning, we have Paul Jacobs, president of Citizens in Charge. And in my opinion, he's the ultimate activist and defender of citizens' rights. If you're listening in, please call him with your question, 646-652-4620. Or if you wish, call toll-free, 888-773-4496. We'll welcome your questions. We know a few people have been trying to call in to our studio number rather than our call-in number. So if you've tried and were unable to get through, it's because no one's there right now to answer that phone call. So 646-652-4620 or 888-773-4496. Our toll-free number is new. We're trying it and see what happens. And we'll see what happens today, Paul. Do you think the timing was sort of better this time because people are really concerned, fed up, and scared, and that so they took the position that I'm voting against, and that's why so many of the initiative, so many of the ballot issues went in the favor of the citizens, so to speak.
Well, I do think one, you had a very energized public. I heard someone expert on elections talking about the fact that this was a much higher turnout for a midterm election than back in 2006, and was suggesting that it was one of the higher turnouts. I do think people have really been scared, frankly, in the last couple of years, and my only thought is, what were you waiting on? Because I was pretty scared throughout most of the Bush administration. And so it, you know, politics has become scary. I think it's, I saw a headline in USA Today talking about the angry electorate, and I kind of have two minds of it. On the one hand, I think the electorate is sort of angry and ought to be. But on the other hand, I run into people all the time who are political people and who aren't, and I don't think they're running around, you know, with their fists clenched and so on. They're not angry people. They're reasonable people who look at government and say it's unreasonable.
That's right.
And I think I think especially, you know, there's a lot of folks who will say, well, it's the bad economy. You got people out of work. You've got, people aren't getting cost of living increases and raises, and the economy isn't zooming along. And I think all of that is true. But I don't think that the voters are somehow, you know, lab rats who, when the economy isn't as good, start going berserk. I think they've looked at what's going on, and they realize that in the face of this economic trouble, the government has not responded. The folks who are in elected office, I mean, look at the stimulus legislation where the country's in trouble, so they say they've got to prime the pump by spending some money and so on, but they stick in all kinds of pork projects.
Right.
Look at the health care. It's a serious problem they have to tackle. Well, why did they slip in all the other extraneous stuff, like forcing businesses to send a 1099 every time they buy a postage stamp?
Right.
These are the kind of things that tell me that we have a government completely out of control. Around the country, people are not getting raises. They're worried about keeping their job, or, you know, about 10% of us are out of work. And yet we're talking about giving, you know, unionized public employees 10 and 15% raises.
Right.
We're seeing cities like Bell, California, where a city that's, you know, 20,000 people has a mayor making $800,000, or I may be wrong, it may be the city manager, but it's ridiculous. And what that says, it's scary when you're going 100 miles an hour headed to the cliff. But it's even scarier when you turn over to your, supposed servant in public office, and you realize he's looking out the window and not paying attention.
Right.
And that's kind of the way I see the government at this point. And I do think the citizenry is engaged, in a little deeper way than they have been for many years. And I think that's why a lot of good things did pass on the ballot. I think that's why, even though they're concerned, they swept the Democrats out of office, just like 4 years ago they swept the Republicans out of the House. And so I see this as a wonderful day 2 days ago, but the solution didn't happen at the polls. My sense, and I get this from just about every partisan Republican I know. As you know, Joe, I'm a libertarian.
Right.
I don't consider myself a Republican or a Democrat. I think, like most Americans, I'm an independent with libertarian views.
Same with me.
And I don't say most are necessarily libertarian, but I am. But most are independent, and I think that people realize now that if we go back to doing something else, to not paying attention, this Tea Party movement that energized the Republicans in this election, it's got to stay energized, because the moment we turn our backs, I don't think any of us, even the folks who are walking precincts for Republicans, don't have faith that the Republicans will do the right thing left to their own devices. We've got to be all over them.
Right. Well, it's a money-driven system, and whoever puts them in office, that's what they're going to do, and that's my feelings on it. By the way, I never voted on Tuesday because I couldn't get in. I stood online for a few minutes and realized the line was not moving at all, and there must have been 50 people ahead of me. So I did a quick calculation. I said, "Good, I'll be standing here for 4 hours before I get in." So I returned about 3 hours later, and this was 1:30 in the afternoon. I figured no one would be there. I'd walk in and walk out. I returned at about 4:20 in the afternoon. Figure they should have been flushed out, and by this time people are not home yet from work. I said should be a dead hour. Went there. The line was around the parking lot, and I figured these people would, even at 4:30, these people would never make it by 7:00. But I did return at around 6:15 or 6:20. With my wife. Still, people were lined up all over, and the line, we stood there, the line did not move, and there was no way these people ever got to vote. We don't know why, but people just stood there, but they didn't leave. Cars were parked on the grass all over the place because they were just piling in, and they were just adding to the numbers, but no one was moving. And every 5 minutes, one person would come walking out, and I had no idea what happened yet. That wasn't the problem with the other precincts. We don't know why this one. There must have been a major problem in our precinct. Don't know. So I really never got to vote, and I was very disappointed because usually I don't care if I vote. This time I did because of all the propositions that I wanted to vote for, anyway, the initiatives. But
right.
What's your take on Rand Paul?
I like Rand Paul. I met him in 1988. I worked for the Ron Paul for President campaign. He ran as a libertarian and was on the ballot in 47 states, and I was involved helping him get on the ballot in those states. And in the course of that, I got to meet Rand Paul and got to know him, fairly well. And it's funny because he still looks awfully young, but of course that was. That was 22 years ago, so he's a lot older now.
Yeah.
He's a grown-up now. I think he was probably 18, 19, 20 at that time. But I think he's a principled guy. He's he is an insurgent type candidate. He talked a lot about the Tea Party, and I think he fit the Tea Party. It's one of those things that. I've spent a lot of my life trying to be as good a father and as good a husband as I think my father was, and I suspect as an elected official, my view is he's got a lot to live up to. because I think his dad is a wonderful guy, and it helps that I agree with him politically. But I'm always amazed by the kind of respect for Ron Paul from people who are on the left. I think when I was on your program probably a year or so ago, I remember we got into a conversation about Ralph Nader, and both of us saying how much we respect him.
Absolutely.
And I disagree with him, I suspect, on 95%
right.
of his right. policy positions.
Right.
But frankly, and I've met him, he's a very interesting guy, but I just respect him because I think he does what he believes is right.
Right.
And that's what I think we ask of people. And so I think Rand Paul's going to be a fantastic senator.
Great.
But I'll tell you, I always think, boy, he's got a lot to live up to be the kind of just stalwart legislator that his father has been. And I think the folks against him, they wanted to go after him on all kinds of things. And libertarian-oriented folks, and he ran as a Republican, but people who believe in certain principles sometimes find themselves supporting things that are not popular. And our politics has generally been characterized by folks doing whatever the poll, says they'll do, at least pretending to. And so I think they thought that they could go after Rand Paul and beat him by pulling out one position or another might seem too radical. But I think increasingly, and this is, I don't see this as a new phenomenon. I think there were a lot of people back in 1992 who voted for Ross Perot for president, who didn't necessarily agree with Perot on everything, or didn't necessarily have any great, love for Ross Perot, but liked the fact that he was talking common sense, that he was saying what he believed in, that he wasn't a politician just trying to, weasel his way into office. And I think that's something that that Rand Paul had, and I think there were a lot of candidates out there like that. Marco Rubio in Florida. Here's a guy who started his campaign, talked about what he believed in, went around the state, got a lot of conservative Republicans excited, kept talking about what he believed in. He's running against the sitting governor of the state, someone who obviously can get votes, and he just keeps giving his message. And Charlie Crist in Florida realized he couldn't win in the Republican primary, so he switches to be an independent, and then he just keeps seeming to drift to wherever he can find more votes. And in the end, Rubio got basically 50% of the vote in a three-way race. And Crist just went nowhere. And I think voters increasingly have the same feelings that you and I do, Joe.
Yeah.
That we want someone who's authentic. If we disagree with that candidate on a certain issue, we can get over that.
Right.
As long as we feel like they're honest and doing what they believe in, and they actually believe in something. And I'm hopeful that that's going to be a continuing wave in politics. Candidates who tell you what they really believe, and voters who say, you know what, I don't agree with you on everything, but I trust you, and I'd rather have you than someone who'll just lie to me and tell me they agree with everything, and then go to Washington or to the State House and do whatever they darn well please.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy as a clam. I don't know where did that comment come from, that statement, happy as a clam. A clam's happy? I've never understood that, but I'm happy as a clam that Rand Paul won. I did hear him in an interview, and he got real wishy-washy, and it really bothered me. And I couldn't figure out why he was being wishy-washy. And one comment I remember him saying, and I think they asked him a question about the war or, a major issue. And he says, well, I wouldn't go as far as my father. And I never understood what he meant by that. I wouldn't go as far as my father. And that turned me off. And I wish I could remember what the issue was. It was,
He is not as strong on foreign policy as his father. And by strong, you know, it may be that I mean he's not as right.
Yeah,
I agree with Ron Paul on foreign policy issues. And Rand, I think, is a little more conservative, less libertarian when you compare him to his father.
Yeah.
And I suspect he had, you know, he's new to all this, and boy, you know, was kind of a national sensation all over the media and so on. But I'll tell you, I'll make this prediction. If he is seen as the Tea Party candidate, if he has the same sort of perspective among voters in 6 years when he runs for re-election, as someone who's hard charging, you know, different, coming from the grassroots, has principled positions, he'll win re-election. If he runs for re-election in 6 years as a run-of-the-mill Republican, will lose.
Right, I agree. I think because everyone's looking for the real change in that they're fighting in Washington to get Washington the hell off of our backs. And if he becomes part of the establishment, he's going to lose that. He's gone. I agree. Yeah, I absolutely agree.
You know, I live in Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C., and so I see a lot of the TV ads and other things for Maryland as well as Virginia and D.C., and they had a governor's race, and Bob Ehrlich, who's a Republican, had been governor, was defeated by the Democrat in 06, ran this time, didn't win. And I remember that when I was working for U.S. Term Limits, we would send things to members of Congress. And every time I sent something out, you know, urging people to sign a pledge to support term limits or something like that, I would get a letter back. You know, most time they don't make any response unless they're with you, and then they say, hey, when's the press conference so that I could get a photo op?
Right.
But he would send back a note saying, I disagree with you on term limits. I don't think it's the right way to go. But I agree with a lot of the sentiment about getting Congress more under control, and I'd help fight against pensions and perks and other things. You know, to this day, I really respect him. And it's interesting that oftentimes it's like, you know, you respect the person who tells it straight, whether you agree or don't agree.
Right.
And it's a
exactly.
little bit reminds me of the feelings you have for your father. You know, when you're 17 and 18, he doesn't know anything.
Right.
And he's always so such a stickler about everything.
Right.
And then you turn 22 or 23 and you realize he was the one guy who never sugarcoated it, who never looked at rose-colored glasses, who told you straight, who was always honest, and you just realize how important that is. And I think, you know, through bitter experience, more and more of us are seeing that in politics, too.
Right. You know, my
we want the guy who tells it straight.
Right. My father said the things to me that I said, that this man is a lunatic. How did I ever get in this family? And now I look back, the man was brilliant. I mean,
yeah.
You know, when you're young, he used to say things, Paul, like, Giuseppe, remember, never own anything. I used to go, oh, I'm a wacko, you know. And now here I am at 67. I want to give everything away. I want to own absolutely nothing. And I laugh. I go, my father was right. Folks, you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We haven't had any callers this morning. I am shocked. I mean, last week we were flooded with call-ins. I don't know, Paul. Maybe everyone's sleeping this morning, or they're resting because they're so elated from the election. They figure they don't have to do anything anymore, but they can sleep it in now. But this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We're interviewing Paul Jacobs, president of Citizens in Charge, and he is the ultimate activist and defender of citizens' rights, and he's my hero, I can tell you that. You can read his commentary on common sense on the internet. And what's the website on that common sense, Paul?
The website is thisiscommonsense.com.
Oh, this is.
And I end each commentary with this is common sense, and so our And everybody had gobbled up all the commonsense.com, so it's thisiscommonsense.com.
Okay, I read it daily. Sometimes I miss on occasion, but I get it 90% of the times, and I'm wiser for it, and I appreciate it. Paul, how you do it, I don't know. But we do need some call-ins. Come on, folks. You're making me look bad. You can even call now toll-free, 888-773-4496. I hope that phone is working. If you want to call direct from your cell phone, it's 646-652-4620. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. I know you're out there. Don't let me come out there and get you, okay? Now call in. Paul... I'm going to change it around a little bit and probably get into... Oh, by the way, one comment I would like to make, and I'd like to get your feelings on it. I have always felt that we do not have a voting system, a true voting system. A true voting system would mean that we could vote for whomever we wanted. I mean, why do we have to be corralled into this Republican or Democrat, and sometimes there's an independent? Why can't we vote for anyone the heck we want? I want to vote for Porky Pig. Why aren't I allowed to vote for Porky Pig? And above that, why aren't on every single ballot, why isn't there a third line that says maybe Republican, Democrat, write in, or none of the above? Why aren't we given the option to say, I don't agree with either one of them. I think both of them really stink. None of the above. And if everyone went to the ballots and a majority voted for none of the above, they know they have two people that are running that are invalid candidates. And now that's a truer voting system. I just wanted your... I'm angry about that all the time, but I'd like your comment on it.
You know... none of the above is interesting. I don't think it, it is worth having, but I don't think it goes far enough because people realize that someone's going to serve in that office and we want to pick who that person is. So they have it actually in Nevada. And I think there was some speculation before the election that it might make the difference in the race because folks certainly didn't like Harry Reid, who won.
Right.
And they were skeptical, and apparently more skeptical than some of the polls suggested, of Sharron Angle.
Right.
And so it could have been the difference in the race. It was not, but it could have been. But I think, you know, people don't often get any history lessons on how our voting process evolved. And back in the day, there were no ballots printed by the government. Different parties or candidates would print ballots with their name on it and hand it out to voters, urging them to turn that ballot in. And it meant that it was a free-for-all. But I think we could use some free-for-all.
Yeah.
You look at the process now, and the courts have pretty much said that the political parties get to control their own, their own elections. But now we, the taxpayers, are paying for their elections. We pay for their big party conventions that spend millions of dollars and wine and dine everybody. And it makes me mad every time there's a Republican or Democratic convention.
Right. Yeah.
I realize that the poor person who may not at all support them is being taxed,
right,
so that wealthy, fat cats, either Republicans or Democrats, can party on the poor person's nickel.
Right.
So it's offensive, but it's not just that. It's also the whole primary process. I think we need a election process that doesn't recognize the parties as some sort of special groups that get special benefits.
Yeah.
And we ought to have an election process where anybody can put their name on the ballot, or where we return to some type of system where you don't get a leg up because you're a Republican or a Democrat. I think there's other things to look at, too. I happen to like instant runoff voting. I think we ought to look at some proportional representation.
Right, I like that too.
Systems where people could vote for the person and the party. I'm very much interested in seeing and trying. You know, we have 50 states. De Tocqueville talked about the laboratories of democracy, and yet everything's been so homogenized in terms of the election process that we don't get to see what
right.
different election
right.
processes might give us. And I think we need to look at those things. The goal is to allow people to be truly represented. And of course, to do that, it's worth experimenting with some of the different ways that do that. And when I say allow people to represent themselves, it always brings me back to the initiative and referendum process. And I think, you know, anytime you're dealing with human beings, you're not going to have perfection. But you have to have the checks and balances. And we are around the country, the initiative and referendum process has so often been under attack. And you hear people now, oftentimes, and it's usually a public official who doesn't want to be checked, who doesn't want to be balanced, but it's usually a public official saying, well, I believe in representative government. And what that really means is, they're using representative government as a euphemism for unrepresentative government.
Right, right.
Because if you believe in representative government, I just can't fathom how you can say that a voter ought not to be able to represent themselves. And when we go
right.
vote on a ballot measure, we are getting to directly represent ourselves. We don't have to go through someone else
right.
and hope that they'll do what we want.
Right.
We get to pull the lever and directly do what we want. And
right.
I think it's an important check. And I think we ought to be looking for ways to get subsidies out of our political process. And right now, both major parties are incredibly subsidized by the government. Most people, I think, graduating from public schools, and for that matter, private schools, have a belief that somehow the two-party system is written into our Constitution.
Oh, yeah, right.
Not only is there not a syllable or a letter or a word about the two-party system in our Constitution, but the founders were extremely scared of that sort of system.
Right.
They talked about factions and the power of factions, and what they meant was special interests, but more specifically, political parties and powerful blocks of special interests combining into political parties with their own agenda. And so I think you're right to look at that we need something that allows us to focus more on the individual candidate and not have these political parties that are subsidized special interests.
Yeah, I read an interesting article many years ago about a voting system, and I can't for the life of me remember what it's called, where you have an option to which you vote for or against each person. And that So if a person is if you're a Republican and a diehard Republican and you vote the party line, you would vote no for the Democrat and yes for the Republican and no for everyone else, unless they're the independent. Well, or you may vote for the independent. You may say, well, the independent sounds like a nice guy, you know, but he probably won't win, you know, because he's an independent. But you really agree with the independent at heart. Now, the Democrat walks in, he votes against the Republican, he votes for the Democrat, but he also likes the independent. He votes for the independent, and the independent wins. I mean, that's a scenario. But it made a lot of sense where you actually are given a choice to say, this person, in my opinion, is fit for office. This one is not. And you do that to each person that's on the ballot. And I, after reading that article, I really favored that system over what we have now.
Well, and you know, part of why I think we don't get presented some of these different options or ways that we could be better represented is because the folks pulling the lever in state legislatures got elected by the system we have.
Right.
And
yeah.
There's a tremendous, I couldn't state it strongly enough, a tremendous bias to keep the system that has put them into office.
Right.
So, you know, I think that is something that we've got to get around. And again, it brings us back to initiative and referendum, because that's most of the serious reforms of our political process. Whether you happen to agree with them or not, I love term limits. I'm not a fan of public financing of elections, which is passed in a couple places. But whether you like them or not, most of the serious reforms are going to have to come directly from the people. You know, there's another aspect, I think, of this that has to do with reform and elections, but also has to do with issues in general and with government in general. And it's something that I hope, you know, there were a number of measures. We talked earlier about the medical freedom of choice measures that passed in a lot of states that were a pushback against federalizing the insurance process and having the federal government step into every business and every home in America and tell people they have to buy insurance. I think that we need to desperately to decentralize power in this country. The federal government not only is the number one taxer, so that we're being taxed by the politicians who are furthest away from us,
right,
and who are generally the least vulnerable to us,
right,
as voters, but they are also then using that largesse to, in essence, buy off our state legislatures and our local governments.
Right.
Oftentimes, when there's a problem at the local level, and you go talk to a legislator, you realize that they are more concerned with what the folks in Washington say, because that's where they're getting a lot of their money, than they are concerned with what we have to say.
Right.
And so I think one of the things, and I believe that this ought to be bipartisan, transpartisan. This isn't about, it's not really about the size of government. It's not about the individual policies. It's about making those decisions as close to the voters who are affected by those decisions as possible.
Right.
And to me, that's just that's just common sense. But we have gone the other route. We have people much more focused on what happens in Washington. And for good reason, because almost all the political decisions made in this country are being made in Washington, and I think there's especially in these last couple of years there's more and more a feeling that we've got to get power out of Washington and get it back to the states, the cities, the townships, and the individual people who make up America.
Right.
And you know, back in the 90s, when the term limits fever, which, of course, the fever remains high, but when it first was taking off, there was a lot of talk about having members of Congress vote from their districts and spend more time at home and less in Washington. And it's good sentiment.
Right.
But the truth is, the solution, and I'm all for that. I'm not against it. But it still suggests that so many of the issues that affect us in Oklahoma or in Nebraska or in Virginia or in Washington State ought to be decided nationally.
Right.
And they ought not be decided nationally.
Right. Paul,
they ought to be decided close to home and not by the congressman,
right,
but by somebody who is elected in a district that, if you disagree, you can walk door to door and talk to people about that disagreement, where you can talk to people at the grocery store or at the ball game.
Right.
And that's something that really has to change. And it's not ideological. It's just flat out common sense.
Right. Paul, we have a caller on the line. Let's get this call. He's been hanging for some time. Caller, you're on the air. You're where you're calling from, and your first name, please.
Charlie from Oklahoma City.
Charlie from Oklahoma City. Okay, Charlie, what you got?
Hey, you may have touched on this. I've been listening in and out, and I'm not sure if this is off topic or not. But assuming the new House follows through on their good intentions, how much can they actually get done? And how do you know who's if things don't get done, who really is the party that's standing in the way? And I'll have to take this off the air because I'm getting ready for work. So, thank you.
Okay, Charlie, thank you, very much for
that
calling.
That is a...
Joe, by the way, that's a fantastic question
from Charlie.
Paul, I just want to interrupt just for a second. We have about 3 or 4 minutes to go, so before we lose our phone line, but go ahead.
Well, it's an excellent question because so much of politics is politicians sliding and being slippery and not allowing us to get them on the record and to figure out who's really doing what they say they'll do and who's not and who's really responsible for some of the bad things or responsible for the good things. But Republicans took the House of Representatives, and last Saturday at I write the column usually on Saturday. It actually appears at townhall.com on Sunday. I wrote a column entitled "On the Coming Government Shutdown," and the basic point I was making is that if Republicans take the House, the Democrats are likely to try to go to to argue that they are not passing a budget that spends enough. At least that's my hope, is that the Republicans won't pass a budget that Democrats think is wonderful and spends all the money they want to spend.
Right.
And that there could be, we could go back to the 90s when there's this, divide in Washington and they can't agree on a budget and it shuts down. And, of course, Clinton was very successful in blaming Republicans, but they kept passing budgets that he could have signed into law and he refused to do so. Anyway, the point is this. Republicans control the House of Representatives. Every spending bill must constitutionally come from the House of Representatives. It must originate there. And no appropriation for spending, no revenue can be raised without the House of Representatives agreeing. In short, if Republicans in the House want to cut government spending, want to stop the increase in government spending, they have the power to do so. Obama can't stop them. The Senate can't stop them. By a majority vote in the House of Representatives, they can unilaterally control the out-of-control spending that has been wrecking this country. And so in 2 years, if politics is the same old mess, I'm going to blame the Republicans in the House of Representatives. It doesn't mean I won't blame Obama, too.
Right.
It doesn't mean I won't blame Democrats who control the Senate. But if my Republican congressman, and actually in my district, unfortunately, there's about an 800-vote difference because I tended to favor the Republican over the Democrat, and the Democrats ahead by about 800 votes. I suspect there'll be a recount, so it may be my Democratic congressman. But if you're in a district and you've got a Republican congressman, I think you have to hold him accountable.
Right.
They have the power to stop the insane spending that is wrecking this country, and there's no excuses.
Paul, we're about out of time. I just want to mention, if you will send me a mailing address and your T-shirt size, I'd love to send you a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt or two. Just tell me how many you want, and they're yours, okay? And if you would do that, I'd appreciate
that.
Yeah, I want to thank you very much for being on our program. We're going to lose our line in about 30 seconds. I didn't want to see you get cut off unnecessarily. I want to thank you once again for being on the program. It's a privilege to have you with us. And good luck, and I want to thank you for all the work you've done.
Well, Joe, thank you for having me on. It is always a pleasure to be on your program. And let's hope we have many more election nights like we did two nights ago.
Agree. Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye. Boy, that's he is some guy. This is the end of today's broadcast, and we'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at 918-749-7711. Please give them a call. Wonderful people. We would also like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or striving to protect them. Unfortunately, folks, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal." The government hates competition. I hope Rand Paul now has that on his desk. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.